is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Lindsay here with my co-host Jason Sunkel, and we are recording this evening, Sunday night, Mother's Day, after two scintillating Game 7s. Jason, let's start with the first game of the day in the Western Conference, Portland and Denver. Your immediate reaction?
CJ's McCollum is their savior because Dame was terrible today. I actually had a friend that I played Xbox with back in the day, who was at the game today, sent me a few pictures. He had never been to a playoff game because he really wasn't into basketball when Denver was really good back in the day, and he's kind of gotten into basketball since. But he said the atmosphere was crazy, and he couldn't believe how well CJ McCollum played. And like he said Jokic was everything he is, and he's just great. And you know, but I thought it came down to the fact that, you know, they just made more plays down the stretch than Denver, and Jokic missed that free throw. That was deflating for them, because I mean, you go back, that's a tie game situation, and it gives them a chance at least. Whereas that missed free throw ended up pushing it to a 4-point lead, and you got to give it to Evan Turner, Mike. Once again, you know, he's kind of. He literally had, I think they said he had 2 points in the series before the game or something like that, maybe 4 points in the series before that. And then he had 13 today or 15, something like that, 9 in the fourth quarter. So I don't know. I really liked what I saw from Portland. And, you know, Denver has to keep their head up, though, because I think they're all a young team, and they'll have another chance at this, I think.
Yeah. So two takeaways. One, I'm going to go back to what I said on our previous podcast, that I thought Lillard had to have a transcendent game in order for them to win. And it flipped, it totally flipped, and McCollum became the Dame Lillard of today's game. So he was 17 to 29 from the field, only made 1 3. That's very, very rare in today's game to score 37 points. And
He went Carmelo on him.
He did, but he was really good. I mean, he made every big basket when they needed it. You mentioned Evan Turner, the two free throws that he hit down there in the last, I don't know, whatever it was, 30 seconds. Those were huge free throws. The Jokic miss that would have got them within range, where it would have given them more possibilities of what they could have done on the last few possessions. That was a big miss. It was surprising to see Dame come up 3 for 17. He hasn't looked the same, in all honesty, since he hit the game-winning shot against Oklahoma City. He's looked very, very average in this series. And I will say that if he's going to be average in the next series, that's going to be a 4-0 sweep if Lillard doesn't come up with some better performances than he had in the totality of this series. He was good in Game 6, but otherwise he really hasn't had the type of series that you would have expected him to. Portland just, they gutted it out, down 17 in the first half. They just kept coming. And, you know, Denver got next to nothing from Jamal Murray. And obviously he's been their second best player throughout this entire playoffs. And he went 4 of 18, did go 9 for 9 from the line, but was 0 for 4 from 3-point land. And they just didn't have, Jokic just didn't get enough support. You know, Murray ended up with 17 because he made 9 free throws. Gary Harris had a decent game, but Millsap went 3 for 13. They just didn't get much out of their bench. So it was pretty much on Jokic, and he wasn't quite good enough in order to get them over the hump.
And I think the thing, you know, you say Millsap only was, you know, he only had 10 points and 3 for 13, but he was in foul trouble most of the game, right? I mean, he only played 31 minutes and he fouled out. So I would assume, now I told you I only watched the first and the fourth quarter because I had some family stuff going on in between, but I would guess that with him only playing 31 minutes, that had to mean that he was in foul trouble most of the game.
I mean, I think he had fouls, but again, you can't go 3 for 13.
Yeah, that's true.
Regardless of how many fouls you have, you got to be able to put up more. They needed somebody else to step up and have a big game in support of Jokic, and you know, they just didn't. 29 and 13 for Jokic. He only had 2 assists, and part of that was just because guys were missing shots, and it's hard to get assists when your teammates aren't putting the ball in the basket. And all that being said, they were still right there. They just They just couldn't score in the fourth quarter, and McCollum was...
They missed their last 17 three-pointers, or 18, because Jokic missed that three-pointer at the buzzer or whatever. So
yeah, McCollum was brilliant in that game. I mean, he just really was. And, you know, Portland shot the heck out of the ball in the fourth quarter from the free-throw line. I mean, they made every big free-throw, and it came down to McCollum being great when they needed him to be great, and it was surprising, again, to see, like I said... Lillard looked a little lost in this game, which is, you just don't expect to see that out of him. And CJ obviously stepped up, and they got enough support from Evan Turner in the fourth quarter, like you mentioned earlier. And they got just enough from other guys in order to get past the Nuggets today.
Well, theoretical Rodney Hood, by the way, Mike, only scored 6 points. So your prediction on if he scored less than 13, they weren't going to win the game.
Well, I didn't hear anything. I haven't heard anything since the game, but he went out and they were saying it was going to be a hyperextended left knee. I haven't seen anything since the game.
Oh, I didn't even realize he got hurt.
Yeah, he got hurt. He actually went to the locker room. I don't think he came back.
He only played 20 minutes.
That was in, I believe that was either at the beginning of the fourth quarter or end of the third quarter. I was still in the car listening to that on the radio at that point. So I didn't see the actual injury. And like I said, I haven't heard anything since the game ended. So okay. I'm not sure what his status is going forward or if it was more than a hyperextended left knee, but that's what they were calling it in the moment.
Listen, I'll tell you what, if it's anything like last year's playoffs, he's not going to do anything against the Warriors anyway. So,
but I was surprised. They were talking on the radio today that he had averaged in this series, he was averaging 13 a game. So I think that was pretty good of you, because last podcast you put his over under at 13.
Oh, that I just randomly pulled that out of the air. I don't want to take credit doing any research.
Somehow you knew what you were doing. You put it right on. You put it right on the number.
The last thing I'll say in this series, before we predict the conference finals, did you see what Cantor tweeted out directly following the game?
I did not see.
Enes Kanter literally had to be 2 minutes after the game was over and he was in the locker room. He retweeted a photo of the Denver email that was asking for pre-sale Western Conference final tickets, and he wrote, "Refunds, please?"
Nice. Good job, Enes. Cantor, he's a social media superstar, that's for sure. He likes to get out there and agitate. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. All right. So is there any other things you want to say about the series and the games?
I'll just say that Jokic has been a revelation. I think if you're Denver, you have to feel pretty good about building your team going forward around Jokic. I know going into the playoffs, I had a lot of questions about whether or not he would be able to be the same type of impact player in the playoffs that he was in the regular season. And he more than proved that he's going to be capable of being a number one guy on a really good team. Now, Denver's got to figure out, I think Millsap has 1 year left on his contract. I think it's a player option, but I'm not 100% sure. So, Is Murray good enough to be your second guy? Of course, they got Michael Porter sitting on the shelf with his back injury. Who knows if he ever comes back? I mean, if he came back and was able to be a guy who was at one point ranked as the number one player in his high school class, if he would be able to come back and play at that level, then you could add him as a dynamic scorer and shooter around the core that they already have. I think Denver's got a bright future. At least they know that Jokic is a guy that's going to be able to play playoff minutes and be able to carry a team in big moments. And so if they can continue to build around him, I think they have something. So that's what I take away from Denver's point of view. And then here we'll talk about what Portland's facing in the next round.
All right. So obviously they're playing Golden State. The series, actually, I had it flip-flopped, Mike, on the last podcast. So you give me the credit for the 13 points. I also said that the Eastern Conference starts on Tuesday, but it's actually the Western Conference that starts on Tuesday. So the Western Conference, they're playing Portland. Will be at Golden State. We talked about it in the last podcast. I think it's pretty much a done deal that Golden State is going to be in the finals. It's just a matter of how many games. And quite frankly, if I'm Golden State, Mike, I do not even think about putting Kevin Durant out there, because I think you can easily beat Portland without Kevin Durant. And there's no sense in injuring him anymore. You know, like we said, give them 2 or 3 games, and if at that point Portland's up 2-1 and Durant's good enough to go, then maybe you start thinking about putting him out there. But I don't think there's any way that they put him out there the first 2 games, because that would just be dumb in my opinion. I'm taking Golden State in 5. I think Portland will sneak 1 game, but I don't think it's going to be any more than that.
Yeah, I'm leaning towards zero games. just because I just look at the matchups, and I just don't know who these people guard. I just don't understand who they're gonna guard. I guess it depends on who Golden State puts in the lineup if Durant doesn't play. I mean, if Durant was in there, there's nowhere to put Cantor. There's already, I think, you know, they always try to hide Lillard to a certain extent. McCollum, it's the McCollum-Lillard size differential in the backcourt. Which one of them goes on Steph? Which one of them goes on Clay? I just don't know how you match up if you're Portland over the course of a series. I think it's going to be very, very tough. I think Golden State's going to have matchup advantages at just about every position, at least when Portland's on defense and they're on offense. And I'm not sure what Portland can really do to be able to combat that. I think you're going to have to see more Zach Collins, and he had 5 fouls again today, and he's been very, very foul prone over the course of this year and through the playoffs. So how many minutes can he play and still be on the floor and not be in foul trouble? The rest of their bench, if Rodney Hood is compromised and isn't able to go, which we don't know at this point, but if it's kind of scary that you're counting on theoretical Rodney Hood as one of your key players to be able to match up with Golden State. I just don't know how they score enough to keep up with the Warriors offense, and then B, I don't think they can get stopped simply because of the matchups. I don't know. I just don't see how Portland can get it done unless Lillard and McCollum are going to both average 35 a game, which I just don't see that happening. I don't think Portland has enough to be able to combat what Golden State's going to do on offense because the matchups are so bad. And then conversely, on the other end, I just don't know how they score. I don't think they have enough. I don't think they're going to be able to score 115 points a game in order to beat Golden State. And so I'm going to say Warriors in 4. I think they just wipe the floor with the Trailblazers. It's not even going to be a series. Maybe Portland gets one because Golden State has a propensity to get sloppy with turnovers and get distracted, especially at this point in their 5-year championship run. So maybe they'll drop one, but I just don't see how Portland can play with them at this point.
All right. So the results for the season, Portland lost, or Golden State won the first game in November by 28 points. The second game in December, they lost to Portland by 1 point, and that was at home. Okay, they must have played a home and home because the next game was also against Portland. So December 27th, they lost at home, but December 29th, they won at home, or won at Portland by 10. And then their most recent game, they played Portland in the middle of February, and Portland won by 22 points. So I don't think that really has any bearing because obviously we're talking Golden State Warriors in the regular season versus Golden State Warriors in the postseason. But it's interesting to see that Portland at least, you know, split the season series. It's gives them a little bit of shining hope. I think Portland will sneak one out, but I don't think there's any way they win more than that.
Yeah, it's too bad. I'd like to see the Warriors have to work to be prepared to play what I think is probably going to be, well, we'll leave that for a second, but
yeah.
I'd like to see them worn out a little bit before they get to the NBA Finals, but I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think they're going to get pushed. My guess is they're going to get a decent amount of rest before they have to go up against the Eastern Conference champion, whoever that ends up being. So Warriors are going to be in the finals. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
No, I agree. All right, so let's move to the second game. The 76ers at Toronto. Mike, we've been proven wrong again. I just don't know how the Sixers lost that game.
Well,
they have no business losing that game.
Well, I can tell you, well, they lost it in a couple of different ways. One, they lost it with 3 possessions from like the 4-minute mark to the 2-minute mark.
I want to say it was actually the 3.5-minute mark because that's exactly when I turned the game back on after doing a few things for around the house. You know, I turned it on at 3.5 minutes and the 3 straight possessions, Jimmy Butler standing in La La Land, not doing anything with the ball, 2 straight shot clock violations, essentially. And then the third one was just a terrible possession.
Yeah, shot clock violation. I mean, their offense just totally abandoned them there in that situation. And to not even get a shot off is just – it's criminal. It's criminal that you don't get a shot off and at least give yourself a chance. I was looking at the box score here, and I know that in – was it? I think it was game six where Embiid was – his plus-minus was plus 40. Well, in this game, Embiid's plus-minus – can you guess what it is?
No. I know that he was at plus 80 for the series.
Okay, so
– Before game seven, I don't know what it ended up being.
Okay, so keep this in mind. Embiid played 45 minutes tonight. His team lost by 2. So that means he sat out for 3 minutes. What do you think his plus minus was?
7.
Plus 10.
Oh my God. Are you kidding me?
Plus 10.
Are you still sticking with Simmons makes that team go?
Man, that is so hard to believe. So that means that they lost 12 points in the 3 minutes that Embiid sat. I mean, that's LeBron-esque from the Cavs in the past. I mean, it's unbelievable. Mike Scott was minus 12. Ennis was minus 8. And Greg Monroe played 2 minutes. He was minus 9.
Minus 9 in a minute 41, Mike. Holy mackerel. I'm looking at this now.
It's unbelievable. And I don't even think, to be honest, I watched that entire game. I didn't think Embiid was that great. I mean, he played fine, but he was 6 for 18 from the field, 1 of 6 from 3. He shot his free throws well, had 11 rebounds, but man, that's unbelievable that he went plus 10 and plus minus, and the bench just couldn't. I mean, they only played, their starters played 42, 45, 42, 43, and 40.
Jeez, so, Louis, I'm looking at this. My gosh. Yeah.
So totally, totally top heavy. And then the other piece of it is Toronto, Serge Ibaka. I mean, obviously, they don't get anywhere near what they're doing without Kawhi and what he was able to do. Kawhi plays like a robot. I mean, he's just like so mechanical and just.
He took 39 shots tonight, Mike.
Yeah, I know he was, but he had to because nobody else on that team was doing anything.
Kyle Lowry, baby.
I mean, Serge Ibaka was the guy. Serge was the guy tonight that made all the difference. He had 8 rebounds, 4 offensive. Seemed like he got his hands on a lot of balls when his team shot the ball, and he either got the rebound or tapped it out or made a play. And Serge was plus 22, plus minus tonight, had 17. And nobody else, I think Siakam was next with 11. Lowry got the double figures with 10. But again, he was 4 of 13 and 1 of 7 from the 3-point line. So you didn't get really – you got a typical playoff Lowry game. And Kawhi ends up with 41 and obviously hits the crazy
– Okay, so you said the Embiid stat was crazy. How crazy the fact that Kawhi scored 41 points and his plus-minus was negative 2?
Right.
I mean, that seems impossible.
It does. He played in 3 minutes. You know, the 3 minutes that he played 43 minutes, so he sat out whatever 5 minutes. And man, it was a very, very strange game because neither team, honestly, I didn't think played particularly well. I mean, Kawhi played the best of probably anybody in the game, but still, he shot, like you said, he shot 16 for 39, and he was 2 of 9 from 3. But yet he's just so methodical, and he has no facial expressions.
He had a facial expression on that shot at the end of the game, Mike.
No, he definitely did. No, he definitely did. He definitely did. But you know what I'm saying? Throughout the game, he just looks so much stronger than everybody else. Like his legs just look thicker, and he just bumps people out of the way and creates space for his shot. And he's been really, really good. But I hate to tell him. That in the next series, it's not happening because
you said Philly was top heavy. They played, at least Philly played 8 guys.
Right.
Toronto only played 7.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And again, Serge was the difference. He really played well. He was active. He made some shots. He was 3 of 5 from 3. And the offensive rebounding really killed them. I think at one point they said that the Raptors had taken like 10 or 12 more shots. So let's see, the Raptors took 89 shots and the Sixers 65.
24 more shots. That's crazy.
Toronto shot 38% from the field, 23% from three, and still won the game. I mean, when you get 24 more shots than your opponent, it's really, really hard to lose that game. And they almost 16 did.
16 offensive rebounds, Mike.
Yeah. 16. I mean, that was the difference. That offensive rebounding was the difference. And you think, again, a team with Philly's size should be able to control the defensive glass. I mean, they're huge. They're mammoth. They're the biggest team in the league. And the fact that they couldn't rebound in big moments and get key stops when they needed them, it killed them. And then that, like we talked about right at the top here, that when they got those 24-second shot clock violations and you don't even get a shot off on key possessions down the stretch, that's not good. So kudos to the Raptors. Kudos to Kawhi Leonard. He was tremendous. That was probably one of the most exciting buzzer beaters that you'll see, just the way the ball bounced up on the rim and then hung there. And it was almost like the buzzer had gone off 3 seconds, 3 seconds earlier. In fact, I don't know if you noticed, but on the TV, they had already flashed up final 90-90. Like it was going, I don't know if they were going to, put it to overtime, but as the ball was bouncing on the rim, they had already put final 90-90, which obviously it wasn't a final, even if it was 90-90, but I just thought, man, that ball's hanging up there on the rim for so long. And it seemed like the whole place was just, it was so long that everybody's just looking at it. And then obviously when it drops in, it was a great moment for the city of Toronto, but a terrible, terrible minute for Philly. So it'll be interesting to see now. Philly's got some decisions and some of their players have some decisions. I don't think that team's going to look the same come next year. I'm surprised. I'll be very surprised if all five of those guys are back in the starting lineup come next October.
I'll be surprised if four of them are back, Mike. I think there's going to be some changes made, and I definitely don't think Brett Brown's back. There was that report that came out yesterday that, if they lose the game, there's a good chance he's going to get fired. I think it's time to move on. If I'm Philadelphia, yes, he did the great thing where he went through the tank. He went through the tank city with that team. But, I mean, that roster was constructed championship or bust, and they were just so inconsistent, and you got to blame someone. And I think he's going to be the fall guy, which quite frankly, Mike, for us, is, I don't know how you feel about this, but I'd be willing to take him as the Cavaliers' next head coach. If he gets fired, at least giving him a look. What do you think?
I'm not opposed to him. I mean, I think that we're in sort of the same stage that Philly was in when they were in tank mode. I mean, we're going to have a young team and we're going to be able to try to build it. So I don't know. I didn't watch enough Philly basketball over the course of the season or over the course of their whole tankapalooza to really form a solid opinion on Brett Brown. I know there's a lot of mixed opinions out there of some people who think he does a decent job and other people who think he's terrible. I will say, though, again, if you look at the bench tonight, what's he supposed to do? He certainly couldn't have made any different personnel moves to improve his team's chances to win. And to some degree, maybe you can blame him for the 24-second violations and whatever offense they're trying to run. But I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if he's back. I wouldn't be surprised if he's fired. But I think the roster is going to be different. I think one of either Tobias Harris or Jimmy Butler is somewhere else. And they still got to figure out the Embiid-Simmons thing. I don't think you're going to trade either one of those guys. I mean, obviously they want to build around Embiid, but with his injury history, it's dicey to say, okay, we're going to get rid of Simmons and then Embiid goes down and now you're left with, the pieces, parts that you're able to get for Simmons. So it'll be an interesting It'll be an interesting summer for Philadelphia. I think if I had to guess, I would say one of either Tobias Harris or Jimmy Butler goes and the other one stays. And I guess I would say probably Brett Brown. I would think Brett Brown, if I had to bet, I would say he's going to get fired, but I wouldn't be surprised if he comes back either.
Would you? Okay. So if you're the Philly, who would you try to make sure you keep, Tobias Harris or Jimmy Butler?
I'd rather have Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, I agree. The only thing that I would worry, and I think the other thing too, with Jimmy Butler is he's, him and Embiid have become buddy-buddy. And if you're building around Embiid, it makes a lot of sense. The only thing I worry about with Jimmy Butler is if something goes bad, I think he kept pretty much under control since he got to Philly. Obviously, there were a few ups and downs, but relatively speaking, compared to what he was doing in Minnesota, I think you can make the argument that he was relatively under control. But you just got to worry. You know, there's always that thing in the back of your head that, is he going to blow up? And do you want to have that happen with your roster and your team and your culture, so to speak? I like you said, I would rather keep Jimmy Butler, but I think if you're the Sixers, you got to think about that a little bit, right?
Oh, for sure. And you got to think about Butler's age relative to the age of Embiid and Simmons, and what kind of contract are you going to offer Jimmy Butler? It's tough. I mean, it's a tough situation because of just where they're at. They don't have a whole lot of assets, obviously, on the bench that they can trade or make deals with. And if you let one of those two guys walk, then where are you? But yet at the same time, you had that same team and you didn't get out of the Eastern Conference. You didn't even make it to the Eastern Conference Finals with that group. So, you know, you're counting on the improvement from Embiid and Simmons. And if those guys continue to work and get better, then maybe you bring that crew back. You find some fringe bench guys that can play better than what you have now and you run it back. But I think one of those guys is going to go somewhere else. Yep. And it may not even be that Philly doesn't want him back. It just may be that they end up taking an offer from somebody else. So we'll see what happens.
Yep. All right. So prediction for the Milwaukee Toronto series. I think we're probably going to be in the same kind of camp here. I feel like it's going to be Milwaukee. And I think, you know, I'm going to give Toronto one game, Mike. I'm going to say Milwaukee in five.
Yes, I'm with you. I think Toronto will get one. I think out of respect for what Kawhi has been able to do to this point, I think that he's going to have a great game. And I said it before game seven that the role players are, you know, they're not going to be consistent, but they are occasionally going to have a decent game. So they might throw together a game where Serge and Lowry and Siakam all play well on a given night. And when that happens, Toronto will be tough to beat. But over the course of a seven game series, I just think Milwaukee has too many weapons. They're going to score too easily. They have a much better offense than Toronto with many more ways to score. And I think their defense is equal, if not superior, to what Toronto can throw out there. I think with Kawhi, you know, you can put different guys. Milwaukee can throw a lot of different looks at Kawhi. You know, you want to lock him down with Giannis, just put Giannis on him. Do you want to put Middleton on him and still allow Giannis to kind of play that center field roaming position, kind of like he has all season, where he's just the guy coming from the weak side to disrupt things and get into passing lanes? I think they have a lot of options, and I don't think anybody else on that team, if you look up and down that roster, I just don't think anybody else is scary when you look at what Milwaukee's trying to accomplish defensively and, you know, how stern they were during the regular season. And then their offense obviously is much better than Philly's offense. And I just think that Milwaukee's got too much firepower on the one end and the defense that they can throw at Toronto, when Toronto just doesn't have the type of dynamic scorers and playmakers that they need. I don't trust their role players to play well every game. And I just think Milwaukee has too much. And I think Giannis is going to, it's his season. He's going to be the MVP. And I just think they're going to get to the finals because they have a better, more potent offense that's more diverse than what Philly could throw out there. And I think they have a better system. And I think Toronto's going to have a hard time dealing with that. And then I think they just have a lot of different things they can throw at the Raptors that are going to make it tough for them to score. So I like Milwaukee. I think Milwaukee in five seems reasonable, with Toronto getting one of their home games and then Milwaukee going back up 3-1, going back home and finishing it out in game five.
Yep. All right. So obviously we're setting back up to what exactly we thought was going to happen, being Milwaukee Golden State. I will be pleasantly surprised if Portland somehow pulls it off. Unfortunately, whether Portland or Golden State wins, we'll have to deal with the Curry family for another championship game, because Seth is, of course, on Portland. That's going to be kind of a little interesting little subplot in the Western Conference Finals.
Is Dell going to wear like a half and half shirt, you think?
Well, someone said that they should really just wear Portland stuff because Golden State's been spoiled. Steph has been spoiled in that. And then someone said, well, maybe they'll do at the Golden State games, they'll wear Golden State stuff, and at Portland games, they'll wear Portland stuff, which that kind of makes sense to me. I don't know.
Or maybe dad wears the Golden State jersey one game, and mom wears the Portland jersey the one game.
And then they flip-flop it.
And they flip-flop them. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. Anyways, we're going to have to deal with them, regardless of what this outcome. The next thing we want to talk about, unless there's something else you want to talk about with the playoffs, so to speak, is there anything else? Or
no, I think we're good on that. It was two great game sevens.
Yeah.
The Kawhi shot was great. McCollum was great. Jokic was great.
I have to say, I did enjoy LeBron's tweeting today, Mike. He had some good tweets today. He had some good tweets today because he was obviously watching. I wonder if he's holding a watch party of some sort. He was tweeting a lot, talking about how game sevens are the best thing in basketball. And, you know, he always said that in the past, but it was kind of interesting to hear because obviously normally he's out there playing and we're not getting any playoff perspective from him because he goes dark, zero dark 30 or whatever it is. But it was cool to see that. But anyways, speaking of LeBron, the Los Angeles Lakers have hired Vogel as their head coach, assisted by Jason Kidd, who you thought was going to get the head coaching job. Listen, if I'm Frank Vogel, I'm literally going to be peering over my back shoulder every single game. This is the most idiotic thing that the Lakers could have done. And I can't believe that Vogel agreed to the terms. I just can't believe that he said, okay, yeah, I'll take Jason Kidd as an assistant coach. That, I don't know. That just seems idiotic to me.
All right, so you're familiar with Jalen Rose, correct?
Yes, I know Jalen Rose.
All right, and you know his one saying for guys who hang around in the league and they just continue to be on a roster, you know what he says about that, those guys?
No, I can't remember what he says.
Just keep getting them checks. That's what Frank Vogel's going to be doing. He's just going to keep getting them checks. So for however long, I don't know what the length of his contract is. Do you know what the length of his contract was?
I thought it was a four-year deal.
Okay, so it's a four-year deal. So 6 months into the season next year when he gets fired, then he's going to have 3.5 years of just getting them checks while he's sitting at home and Jason Kidd is coaching the Lakers. It just – like, I think Frank Vogel's a fine coach. I mean, he did a great job when he was in Indiana and had the Paul George, Roy Hibbert, Indiana Pacers challenging the Miami Heat. So I think the guy can coach. He didn't have as much success when he was in Orlando and he didn't have as good of players, but – I think he proved when he was with the Pacers that he's competent, but I just don't know that it makes sense when Kidd is on the roster and Kidd clearly has a positive relationship with LeBron.
It's 3 years, Mike. It's not 4 years. So the length of LeBron's contract is how long Frank Vogel's contract is. I apologize.
So he's only going to be getting them checks for 2.5 months instead of 2.5 years instead of 3.5 years. It doesn't make sense to me because we know that when LeBron has something in mind that he wants to happen, and he may not even think he wants it to happen right now today if you talk to him, and I think he'd honestly believe, I'm 100% on board with Coach Vogel, but we all know that immediately that his relationship with Jason Kidd is going to lead to him doing things, saying things, subtweeting things that are going to undermine Frank Vogel and that are going to agitate for Jason Kidd becoming the head coach of the Lakers. So it's just it's a very, very weird dynamic to put your power structure in place where it's clear that the number two guy is going to be the choice of your number one player and the guy who has more influence than probably any player in modern history for sure over the decisions that their franchise makes. So again, if the Buss family wants to play Frank Vogel not to coach the Lakers for 2 years, great. More power to him.
So the jump, did you see Steven Jackson appeared on the jump after Frank Vogel's hiring? Did you see this?
I did not.
So Steven Jackson, obviously he played for Frank Vogel when he was in Indiana and they asked him about Frank Vogel coaching LeBron and his response is, Frank Vogel can't coach LeBron.
It's not a good response.
Like you said, I think Frank Vogel's a really good coach. I think he's a solid coach. Is he the splash that the Lakers needed or the guy that the Lakers needed to coach LeBron? I'm not quite so sure. And quite frankly, you know, I was joking with some friends that are in my fantasy basketball league with. There's a few of them that are Laker fans, and like they've been Laker fans forever, so they didn't just join the Laker fandom when LeBron went there. But two of the three of them don't even like LeBron, so it's pretty funny. And they said Frank Vogel was a good coach. And I said, yeah, he was a good coach. LeBron's going to like him because he beat him 2 years straight in the Eastern Conference Finals. So he's probably going to respect him and like him a lot. I don't know. I don't think, like you said, I don't think Frank Vogel, you know, he might make it through 1 year of his contract, but I don't see him lasting 3 years.
But here's the thing. Go back to our conversation from the last podcast when we were talking about the fact that Ty Lue didn't get the job and how, you know, he seemed like he would be a good candidate because of his previous relationship with LeBron. We're now, I guess, in theory, advocating for Jason Kidd to get the Lakers job. And he was, I don't know if you can go so far as to say he was a disaster in his previous coaching stops, but he certainly didn't distinguish himself as being a great coach. And you look what Budenholzer has done with the Bucks this year compared to where the Bucks were a year ago. And we're basically saying that let's give Jason Kidd a little bit of credit here and say he's an average coach. And I think that may be even overselling. Yeah, overselling, at least what he's been to this point. Now, again, guys get better and improve, but he's at best an average NBA coach. And we're advocating that, man, it seemed like it was a no-brainer that you would give the job to Jason Kidd. And this is the Lakers' job. This is the marquee job, or one of the marquee jobs in the league, and you have LeBron on your team, and the candidates that you're going after and the people that you're getting, just, I don't know. It's the Lakers are a mess. It really is a mess. And
So I want you to prognosticate a little bit here, Mike. Will LeBron finish his 3-year contract as a Laker?
Ooh, yes.
He's going to stay there. He's not going to be traded. He's not going to do what, I mean, I don't know what other options would be. They're not going to obviously cut him. But you know, I don't know. I'm starting to, we'll see. I think this season's going to determine that or not, because if it happens again where they just don't mesh and they don't end up doing things and they don't get another player, I could totally see the Lakers trading them.
Well, we're going to see what LeBron, we're going to see how much winning means to him at this point in his career, because unless they do something completely unexpected this summer, they're not going to win. They're not going to be at the top of the Western Conference next year. And he's going to probably have to make a decision whether or not winning is going to matter to him enough that he wants to leave his dream home and where he wanted to kind of build his business and take his family. And obviously they could stay there if they wanted to, and he could go and sign or get traded to another team. But I don't know. I'm not sure where that whole thing goes. And I think LeBron will be there because I think he wants to be in LA. And even, I don't know, I don't have confidence in them to figure it out, but I think LeBron's always going to be a little bit overconfident. So if they can do something, I think at least at the beginning, he's going to feel like they can get it done. But I don't know. I don't see it.
All right. I think the last thing we need to talk about, Mike, is our prediction. Tuesday night, lottery, NBA draft lottery. How are the things going to shake out? Where do you think the Cavs are going to land?
All right, I think we're going to land at number 2. That's what I'm feeling, and I think if we land at number 2, I think we're going to take RJ Barrett. That's what I see end up happening for the Cavs.
All right. I think we're going to land, unfortunately, and maybe I'm just being a negative Nancy in hopes to be pleasantly surprised. I think we're going to land at 3 or 4.
Okay.
And then we're going to get stuck with, you know, I don't want to say stuck with, but we're going to get put in a position. And obviously, I don't know the draft class that well yet, and I haven't really read up on them, because we obviously know Zion and Barrett are 1-2. I think that's pretty consensus. you know,
Morant could stay sneak in there depending.
Yeah,
on
Morant what, could depending on depending what team depending ends on what second too. Yeah,
depending on what team ends up at two. I think Morant, Barrett, and Zion are the top three. I'd be surprised if anybody else cracks that top three. So,
and we don't really know. We haven't heard any European names, right? I mean, I haven't heard any European.
No,
names.
I haven't heard anybody that's being considered in the top five to top 10, at least that. Well, there was one guy I heard, but I, again, like you, I haven't gone into it too deeply, and really I won't care that much until I see where everything falls out and where the teams are. Then you'll start to really look at, okay, who might go after guy X and who are the Cavs going to target at whatever position they're in.
And the only reason I think we're going to get 3 and 4 is because you and I have talked basically ever since the March Madness that we didn't want anything to do with Cam Reddish. And that's right where Cam Reddish is going to go is 3, 4, 5. So I think we're going to get kind of in that zone. I'm not saying that's who the Cavs are going to end up if that's where they end up in their picking, but it's going to be, I don't want anything to do with it, but I feel like karma is going to get us, and that's where we're going to end up.
Well, we'll see. I mean, we've won so many lotteries that we're probably due to get a bad result in a lottery. But, well, we can keep our fingers crossed and hope that something good happens. And somehow, if it all works out and the ping pong balls fly up the little tube and Zion's able to get to Cleveland, I think that'll be tremendous. But I'm certainly not counting on it.
I can guarantee you if we get to win the lottery on Tuesday night, we're podcasting Tuesday night, you can guarantee that we're going to do a 15-minute discussion on how the heck the Cavs got so lucky that they got Zion, that they're going to get Zion.
Yeah.
But I don't know. We'll see what happens. We'll see Tuesday night.
Absolutely. All right. To everyone out there, thanks for listening to our Game 7 wrap-up edition and NBA Eastern and Western Conference Finals preview show, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast presented by Head Start Basketball.